Welcome to Don't Panic Steve, the podcast that's all about panic attacks, with me, Claire Easton, best-selling author and award-winning mental health blogger, and my mate Chris.
Just a usual disclaimer before we start. In no way is this podcast taking the piss out of mental illness. It's something I take very seriously. I live with it. But I think humour is very beneficial and can be like therapy. So there you go. All right.
You all right?
Yes.
How's life?
All right. It's been a bit... I say mental and that sounds offensive, but do you know what I mean? I reclaim words like that.
Yeah.
It's been a bit hectic this week because I've been to London for a couple of days. Bits and bobs. Ended up... Do you know what? I met the nicest, coolest homeless bloke. My phone's going off. Coolest homeless bloke. And he had this beautiful little dog, a shih tzu. And I ended up paying for the dog to have a groom.
No,
because
right.
He can't afford to feed himself. The last thing he's going to do is pay 45 quid for the shih tzu to get groomed.
Was he happy with that?
Yeah.
Or did he look like he just really wanted some food?
No. Because obviously, like, he's staying in this hostel and he's telling us all about that. Yeah. And I just looked at his dog and he looked like Gandalf, which for a shih tzu, it's like... So I ended up just literally paid the groomer direct because then it's all sorted and then...
Yeah.
So that's my good deed, I think.
Yeah, I'd been National Trusting it up, using the old the National Trust card.
You are getting good use out of that, aren't you, like, with the kids?
Yeah, it's essentially, I mean, it feels like a free day out. It's £10 a month, essentially. But, it kind of feels like a free day out, and you can use it as many times as you want, which seems like a flaw in the system to me.
Mm.
But, you know...
But for the year?
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, so, you know... And I may have a spreadsheet that I...
I would be disappointed if you didn't.
I might record how much we have spent during the year and how much I spent on the membership, just to make sure that you're getting value for money, you know?
Absolutely. It's like a...
Some of the things I admit on this this podcast.
Well, you know, it's a sensible thing to do, isn't it? Like, if you're going to invest in something like that, you should get your return on it.
Yeah, I think technically it's a charity, though, so, I mean, it shouldn't...
Oh, right.
In theory, it shouldn't matter, but it does, to me.
Also, I'm like... Oh, actually, the National Trust are listening. We are absolutely open to bribes and corporate sponsorship.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Just give Chris a free pass for the year.
Yeah, I'm open to bribes from anyone. Anyone who wants to give me a bribe.
So you've seen much more of the countryside, then? That's cool.
Yeah. Yeah, we went to Yorkshire. East Riddleston Hall.
Oh.
It's very good. It took us 1 hour and 10 minutes to get there and 1 hour and 10 minutes to get back. So it's probably a little bit of a long way to go for what it was.
Now I'm just thinking about the Viking Museum. I love it there. I'm probably a bit too old, but...
Where's that, in Yorkshire?
Yeah. It's really good. Also open to corporate sponsorship, the Viking Museum. But yeah, it's been... I struggle with the heat. I know I put this on my Instagram yesterday and... It's like, I do sound really miserable, but the heat sets off my anxiety really bad.
How does it?
Because anything that's like a discomfort, it's like if I get ill, if I get a cold, or any kind of illness, sets off my head because everything goes off balance, hormonally, makes sense. So the heat is one of those things, so I've just been like...
Angry.
I get obsessed with it, like, I'm really hot, I'm too hot, this is just ridiculous, I should tell someone about this. And everyone else is like, seriously miserable, Cal, I have a Solero.
That's Peter Kay, isn't it? He says,
yeah.
Have a Solero and shut up.
Anyway, so just a quick point before we start. We should probably be professional and ask people to subscribe.
Yes, the subscription figures are not as good as the listening figures, which is fine, but
it's fine.
It'd be nice for those to be higher.
So just, I subscribe. I mean, I wish I could tell you properly how to do it, but I think it depends on the platform. I think we're on about 4. I've had to do this myself because we don't have a team. And I'm like, right, come on.
Yeah, I think it's not that difficult. I think there is a button that says subscribe. Just click on that and I think you're done.
Hang on a minute. I thought you meant like it's not that difficult as in like uploading.
Oh, sorry, no. Yeah. Yeah, I've seen you trying to do it and that was not straightforward.
Oh, God. Anyway, yes, do that. This week on the podcast, we're going to talk about the panic cycle. People tend to believe that a panic attack is random and doesn't follow kind of a logical pattern. And I was one of those people. You know, I think the very term attack implies that it happens out of the blue.
Mm.
You're walking down the street, everything's nice, someone comes along and punches you in the balls. You know, that kind of It's really is a strike apart.
Or an old woman calls you a coward.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Is that episode 2 or 1? I can't remember. Go back and listen.
Subscribe. Yes.
So it can, this kind of, well, yeah, the attack theory can really make the person feel helpless. Because how can you combat something that's completely all over the place? Mm. Constantly like, oh, where do I even start? I think, Christ, the first few months after my diagnosis were the worst for that reason, because I'm a big believer in looking for a solution, being proactive.
Yeah.
And the fact that I couldn't find anything, it was horrendous. Mm. Like, there's no pattern to this. There's no rhyme or reason. I can just be sat watching TV and suddenly this wave comes over me and I'm like, I actually can't cope. But, and we wouldn't be doing this episode if there wasn't a but, the theory of it actually isn't true at all, because panic follows a very clear cycle that the individual gets caught up in. If you Google panic cycle, then you'll kind of find a load of different diagrams, one of which I sent to you.
Yes.
What did you think?
And I actually read it, honestly. Yeah, no, I thought it was really good. Obviously, I've never really suffered from panic attacks, but the logic of it made sense.
Yeah.
I could see how it could happen. Mm-hmm. And sort of where it could come from.
And so what did you... Can you remember anything like about the cycle itself?
So I think what stood out for me is that it's... I think the key stage is the misunderstanding that the physical symptoms you're getting are more serious than they are, almost.
Yeah.
I think that's the point at which it kind of goes from being what the average person on the street might feel like in a situation that is unfamiliar or, you know, they're not happy with, and goes into goes up a level to into a panic attack kind of thing.
Yeah. And it's, I mean, I'll go through, I've developed my own Claire 7-step panic attack cycle explanation, because the ones on Google and on all these websites admittedly are a little bit complicated, I think.
Yeah, the one you sent me wasn't too...
I think that was the best of the bunch.
Yeah.
But it's still like, you could summarise that a bit easier.
Yeah, you could. Yeah.
Like, go from here to here to here to here to here. That's why I think, because it all happens so quickly, the attack itself, that's what you focus on.
Yeah.
You don't think like, well, what kind of headspace was I in before it started?
Yeah, you don't think about the build-up to it.
No.
That's kind of what I was saying, I suppose. You kind of focus, once those physical symptoms start, that's what you focus on.
Absolutely, and you just suddenly, like, it came out of nowhere.
Mm.
Like a mugger who punched me in the balls. I don't know why you're saying that, because I don't have any.
It wouldn't be nice, as somebody who does have them.
I was actually reading a very interesting debate on Twitter the other day about, is a punch in the balls... Is it as bad as being punched in the tit? Are they the same?
Right. I thought you should say... bring childbirth into it,
which is
not something that I'm going...
And I was like, hang on a minute, I've never been punched there, so I'm like, mate, like, if, you know...
It's a specific place to be punched, isn't it? You know,
Also, I would kick a woman in the nether regions and fight if
I imagine that would hurt.
Yeah. If you've ever been on a bike, fallen forward on the bar as a kid, you'll know what I mean. Jesus.
Yeah.
But,
we've all been there, Claire.
That's not part of the panic cycle.
That's quite a tangent, though, isn't it?
No, I just thought it was really interesting. And these two people on Twitter were getting very annoyed. And the man's like, I cannot believe you would even suggest. Those things are not even in the same league. And I was like, okay. And the woman's like...
I don't understand how you can have an opinion on it. Because unless you've experienced both of them, how could you possibly know?
Well, have you heard of social media?
Well, exactly, yeah.
Because where a lot of people who don't... It's like... I absolutely hate this book. I've not read it.
Yeah. I don't have the description of it.
So, let's move on to the Claire 7-step panic cycle explanation. What I'm going to do is take you through it. If you want to make notes, I don't know why you would. You can always just listen back later. But awesome. And I'm going to go through it in a very basic way so that you see kind of how it works and how you might get tricked into, like, not remembering some of it.
I feel like that needs a jingle, by the way. The Claire Easton 7-step thing, whatever you say. Sponsored by the National Trust.
And the Viking Museum. Click it then. And in other words, you're going to do a CD, you're going to do an album for clicking. Like.
Oh yeah, clicking. Boom. Yeah, I've not got around to that yet.
Okay, fine. One of us is more committed. All right. If you've had one panic attack, this is how it works. Unfortunately, you will have another. because it's a kind of trauma. Mm. It's and your brain is looking for it.
Right, okay.
Particularly if you can't explain it, you're like, what the hell was that?
Mm.
Anyway, so the pre-fear stage is you kind of worrying that it or the attack is going to happen. So you might be in a car, going to a party, or off to the supermarket or anything, and you think, I don't want this to happen. I don't know what I'm going to do if it happens. And you're saying, oh, okay. And you just keep pushing it down, like, no, don't be stupid. It's fine, we can deal with this, ignore it.
So it's like a self-fulfilling prophecy, almost.
Look at you, the fancy
I studied psychology.
Did you?
Yeah. Yeah, I did.
What? A college?
Yeah, for, I did it in first year AS level. And then they lost me coursework, so I got like a U because they didn't. I didn't have any coursework, even though I had done it. So yeah, I dropped it after that. But I remember the phrase self-fulfilling prophecy. So I've learned something.
That's pretty cool. I did politics in the first year too and dropped that straight away when I realised crisis is bad.
Yeah, well, I mean, maybe more people, such as people in the government, should have studied it.
I think so.
Hashtag Brexit.
He's going to become Prime Minister, isn't he?
Yes. I mean, what the alternatives weren't much better, though, were they?
No. I mean, talk about pre-fear, though. I'm like, oh. So that's that. Then comes the trigger. So you are triggered by something unknowingly or knowingly. It's not always quite as clear-cut as you think. Because, how do I explain this? So your subconscious is filtering the situation that you're in. And if you think it's looking for signs that you're in danger. So you're triggered by it. Like, bang, it happens.
Mm.
Then is phase one. I'm just trying to keep it simple. Then it's phase one.
Phase one.
And the first symptom appears, and it can be a thought such as, oh, I don't feel right.
Yeah.
Or it can be a physical one, like, oh, my heart's beating faster than it normally does. So it could be anything, and it's usually one symptom.
And I imagine that builds on the pre-fear as well. It's like, totally. What I expected was going to happen is now happening.
Yeah. And it's what you were saying about how... Well, I'll link it into phase two. Then phase two.
Phase two.
Phase two happens and more symptoms appear rapidly in like really quick succession. And you start to feel overwhelmed. So what you were talking about earlier, the whole... somebody might experience something and act one way, somebody else is like, oh my God, and then all this other stuff comes like rolled into one.
Yeah.
And then you get what's called the full-blown attack. So your brain at this point goes into full, you know, full-blown freak out mode.
Mm.
It's the attack. This is the real thing. Not that there's a fake thing, but you know what I mean? It's the real deal. So the symptoms that you experience kind of reach a peak. And you're convinced that you're about to either drop dead or go mad.
Yeah.
It's one of the two, usually. So this happens. It's awful. It won't last for more than 15 minutes. That's kind of the max, which is a long time to spend in hell.
Yeah, I mean, 15 minutes in theory doesn't sound a lot, does it? But I imagine when you're having a panic attack, that is a long time.
It's like one of those, I try and liken it to... Yeah, it's only 15 minutes. Right. Have you ever gotten a lift with someone you're not comfortable with?
I'm not comfortable with anyone in a lift, to be honest with you.
Me neither. And I feel like clarifying as soon as I get in. Seriously, don't feel the need to talk to me. Like, please don't. Like, not in a rude way.
Yeah.
I'm like, just relax. Do what you're doing. Let's all pretend like we're cool.
No, nothing makes you relax in a lift more than someone telling you to relax.
I have always wanted to get in a lift. And stand facing everyone just to see if it freaks somebody out.
Have you seen the experiments they did? In I think it was in like the 70s or the 80s.
Oh, God.
You can see them on YouTube. And it's people in a lift. And they put like someone in who's like a... I say an actor in the loosest possible sense, obviously. And they do that.
Really?
So they show them everyone going into the lift. And this person stands a different way to the other people. And when they show them coming out of the... Like when the lift doors open... Everyone's standing the way that the person, the actor, was standing.
Really?
It's like a weird, like, social, like, behaviour experiment thing.
See, I did sociology. Look at this, looking back to our college qualifications.
Yeah. Who would have thought that those would be useful?
And there was another one I heard about where you get on an empty bus, so this guy did, apart from there's one person sat down, and the guy went and sat next to him.
Yeah.
That's weird, isn't it?
That's the worst thing in the world.
And technically you're like, okay, oh God, it's like when you see someone you know on the bus but not well enough to be like, oh shit.
Yeah, and you know that that's it now. Yeah. I've hidden from people before.
Me too. Preaching to the choir here, I once hid under a table in a coffee shop to avoid someone.
I've never gone to that extreme, but yeah.
I'm committed. Social anxiety makes you commit. But, oh, it's... Yeah, this. I had everything planned out. I was going to read this, I was going to listen to that, and now I have to talk to you.
Yeah.
And this is why we don't have many friends, Chris.
Oh, speak for yourself. I've got all the friends.
So, yes, full-blown attack. 15 minutes is the absolute max, but it is horrendous. Then it ends... Because it always does. This is something I say to comfort people if they're experiencing a panic attack. I'm like, listen to me, it will end, whether you like it or not, because everything does. Everything ends.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I'm trying to think.
Life.
You know what I mean? Like, eventually it's going to end because you can't go on forever. So hold on to that. Then, this is the final step, step 7.
We're going from steps, phases. What?
I'm sorry.
Phase 7.
No, it's like phase 1, phase 2, full blown attack.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, this is me not following it.
And then it's the final one. It's the what I call the thank fuck stage, because you get this huge like wash of relief that it's all over and you're still alive. Like, oh my god.
Yeah.
Oh, I got through it. It's done. It's done. It's done. That usually lasts about 10 seconds, I find.
Mm.
And then you go straight back to pre-fear. What if it happens again? And that's the cycle. And when people say, I can't make any sense of it, I'm like, no, you really can, because you're stuck in this loop. And you just don't realise. And some of the stages can last quite a while. You know, you can be in the pre-fear stage for hours.
Yeah.
Or, you know, suppose you get triggered.
Yeah. Oh, I suppose it could be even longer, couldn't it? In theory, you know, if you know something's coming up that you're not looking forward to, it could be you know, weeks, months.
Absolutely. It's like, as somebody who lives with social anxiety, I'm better now, like a lot better, I can maintain it. But if it's an event where I don't know anyone, and I think most people would be apprehensive about that, I will about a week in advance, I'm like, oh Jesus.
Mm. But I think that's what I kind of alluded to earlier. I think even people who are listening to this who don't have social anxiety or don't have panic attacks will be able to identify with the first few steps, I think.
Yeah.
Everybody has that bit to an extent.
Okay.
So when it becomes a full-blown panic attack, you know, obviously at that point, it becomes something else entirely.
Yeah. And also, I think, no, not... The difference between, you know, people who have panic and don't is you might experience a symptom of... Oh, I feel nervous.
Yeah.
I don't like it. And then you'd be like, oh no, it's okay. You get through it.
Yeah.
Whereas for me, I'd be like, I don't feel right. My heart's beating faster. Oh, and because your brain can't rationalize what's happening, kind of like break it up, the cycle, everything piles in like, oh my God, like rapid heart rate is already there. Can't breathe comes to the party. The sweating arrives. It's like this huge list of people you didn't want to come, you know, comes to your house and won't leave. That's another thing I've got a problem with. It's like therapy, this. You know when someone comes around your house and they stay for a long time?
Yeah. Like, I've never had that, but I've heard like of examples of people doing that, and that would annoy me more than anything, because I like my own space.
Well, I think we're both introverts, so I get about 2 hours. You can get 3 out of me if we're good, really close friends, because I know I can kind of like, just give me a minute. And I just switch off.
Mm.
Like, I need time to recharge. And then
I'm the same. It takes physical energy to, you know, especially if you're in a setting where there's a lot of people.
Yeah.
It like drains you, doesn't it?
Absolutely. And I get really like, I overthink the intricacies of life. And I'm like, I'm stood here talking to you about stuff that nobody's interested in.
Yeah.
I want to ask you how you'd want to be executed, or what's your favourite fruit? Or,
I mean,
do you know what I mean?
You do that with your closest friends, to be fair. The number of times we've been in the pub or something and you're talking about something completely normal, and then you throw in, who's your favourite serial killer? What's your favourite biscuit?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm interested in, you know, the big picture stuff. Who is your favourite serial killer?
I don't have one because I disagree with them.
I mean,
I'm only joking. I think you can only have your favourites have to be from a long time ago, don't they? You can't have one like, if I said Harold Shipman, that's a bit weird. No, I think that's really weird if it's one that's recent.
Okay.
So yeah, I wouldn't say I have a favourite as
probably
such.
Probably the safe answer.
Jack the Ripper, you know, that's long enough ago that we can laugh at it now, can't we?
Yeah, Christ. No, mine's, funny enough, I'm not favourite as in I approve of their behaviour, but I was very interested by Marianne Cotton. There you go. She was a very famous poisoner.
Oh, really?
She just...
Novichok.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
No.
I believed you fully then.
No, in it's kind of the Victorian era. She, you know, when life insurance came in and women would off their husbands and claim the life insurance money.
Oh, right, okay. Yeah, I've not heard of her.
Very lucrative.
Mm.
And the first thing when Dan and I, because we're buying a house at the moment, when we went to see a solicitor and it's like, so are you going to get life insurance? And I was like, yes. Dun, dun, dun. He's like...
Well, let's not forget it's insurance fraud, which is the area that I work in. So, you
oh,
know,
shit. Okay.
You know... Plus, let's just not lose sight of that.
My anxiety's so bad, I'd be like, oh, I couldn't enjoy it afterwards. Like, oh, just forget it. And that's how I'd end up in Canada or prison. We were talking about this earlier. Like, I'm convinced I catastrophize in life that I will end up in prison for something I didn't do.
Yeah. I don't think you will.
Does anyone else have that fear? Let me know. Like, you're really worried about being wrongfully convicted of something, like Deirdre Barlow in...
Free the, yeah, no, exactly what you mean. No, Free the Weatherfield one.
Oh God. Anyway, so back. That's the basic cycle. If you experience panic attacks, I would highly recommend that you look into this a little bit more because it will bring you comfort when it happens. Okay, so this week's panic attack story. Are you excited?
I'm excited.
Okay. So, when, you know, in episode 1 and 2, I kind of spoke about the first few I had, mm-hmm. and then I had a nervous breakdown. I always say that like it's like very charming, because
yeah.
it's the only way I deal with it, you know, because it was so bad, I have to kind of make light of it. But yeah. it was a complete nervous breakdown. You lose the ability to function. So, after this, which was in London, I decided to go back home because that's where my doctor was, and even though I'd lived in London for a good year by that point, I was like, no, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's a lot of effort changing doctors.
Yeah, it is. I think, you know, for people who don't necessarily have these kind of mental health conditions, you can go years without changing your doctor, can't you?
Totally.
You know, it's just not worth the effort.
It's not, and I liked my doctor. Well-ish, they were reliable. Anyway, I hadn't been with Dan for more than 9 months, so I was like, God. And my family's problem, you know, not his. That's the mentality I was in. Like, what must he be thinking?
Yeah.
But, yeah.
I think he understood. He's a very understanding guy.
I think, like anybody else, he had sympathy, you know. It's kind of like, oh, my God, she's not well. I'm going to dump her. Anyway, so after a couple nights that I'd arrived home, bear in mind at this point I'd been having several attacks and it was just horrible, you know, blurred days of seeing the doctor and not understanding what was going on, right? It was the 3rd of December. That's not right. I've written that down wrong. I'll start that again. It was the 3rd of January, which is actually my dad's birthday. And I'd gone through, again, multiple panic attack cycles, but didn't realise because I had no idea what I was dealing with. And I cried. I think we got up to 4 hours straight.
Wow.
I wasn't actually, you know, when you cry because you actually have to do it, you have to make the effort to cry. It wasn't that so much. It was just my eyes were streaming.
Right.
Because all this emotion was pouring out my eyes. And I remember being sat on the couch, physically bracing myself for the kind of next onslaught, the pre-fear.
Yeah.
I was sat and gripping the edge of the seat like, it can come again at any minute. I don't know what to do. And if it happens again... I was really, really in a dark place. Now, my parents, do you know what? For this story, I had to go back and read a diary that I wrote at the time because I'd forgot bits about it. And this is one of the bits I put, like, my parents did what they always did in a time of crisis. I went straight for the wine.
They know you well.
They do, which I'll admit did actually help on that occasion because, again, it's a sedative and also drinking, not necessarily alcohol, but you're doing something different.
Mm. Yeah.
But it was awful. And we were all just kind of at the mercy of this loop of it's going to happen. It's happening. It's happening.
Yeah.
Oh, I got through it. Thank God. I don't want it to happen again. it's happening again, yeah. it's happening again. And it was just this horrendous cycle. And I also remember it being 2 a.m. at one point. My dad was physically holding me in his arms, or restraining me, for want of a better word. And we were drinking red wine and watching Catch Me If You Can.
Right.
Good film.
Well, yeah, you probably weren't in the best place to enjoy it.
Do you know what? Because I'd never seen it before, and I'll be forever thankful to that film, because I was like, it's a good film, this. I'm engaged.
Mm.
And it distracted me a little bit. But at the same time, I was thinking, I am absolutely fucked. I don't know what I'm going to do to get through this, because none of it makes any sense.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I can imagine that if you know you're going through that cycle again and again and again, you think, well, it's not going to end.
Yeah.
You know, it's going to go on forever.
I thought, eventually, I'll die. That's what will happen. Mm. You know, I'll blow something in my brain. So that's what will stop it eventually.
Mm.
And at 2 a.m., you know, and there's no help, and it's quiet, and the only option is to go to hospital, and we knew that they wouldn't do anything.
Yeah.
It was... I can't imagine as a parent as well to watch that and not know what to do, apart from, all right, I'll just physically hold you down so you can't run around screaming anymore. It was, yeah. And it's actually quite difficult for me to talk about it without laughing, because it makes me think of the reality of the situation and how horrible it was, you know?
It sounds awful.
I didn't tell anyone, which is typical me.
Yeah, just put a brave face on it.
I could have just rang any one of my friends and be like, I need you to come over.
Yeah.
And it was, but I was like, nope. But anyway, now, you know, all these years later, when I know so much more, I can identify a cycle just like that.
Right, okay.
I know when I'm like, actually including other people's, if I'm watching somebody who's a bit like that, I can pretty much guess at what point in the cycle they're at.
How did you get to the point of being able to identify it like that? Is it writing stuff down?
Well, funnily enough, I found this guy online, because I Googled what not to do when having a panic attack.
Mm.
Because everything else I was doing at the time wasn't working.
Yeah.
Everything that came natural to me wasn't working. So I'm like, right, I'm just going to Google what not to do. And this guy called David Carbonell, Dr. David Carbonell, who... If I ever meet that man, I'm going to tongue him, whether he likes it or not.
What a lovely phrase.
Because he saved my life. He really did. There wasn't a lot of research back then. And he was based in Chicago, and he had this practice, and he had this website that visually was horrendous. It looked like it had been done in, like, the early 80s.
I love those types of websites. Oh,
do you know, they're so bad. And it's like, anyway, but the content was solid. And he wrote about it. And he wrote about this cycle. He's like, no one is the exception. If you have panic, you have this.
Mm.
And I looked at it amongst other things, and I thought, oh yeah.
Yeah, it all fit.
So I started writing down exactly what happens to me, like you asked, and then it kind of all came together.
Right, okay.
And that, in a sense, allowed me to kind of take back control.
Mm.
Because I'm like, oh, there is a pattern.
Yeah, I think if you're aware of the pattern, then you know what's coming next then, don't you? And can maybe take steps to at least make it a little bit easier to manage.
I liken it to, if you eat too much cake, you'll be sick. That's a pattern. Mm. In the same way with me, it's more, if you sit thinking this way, behaving this way, then of course an attack is going to happen.
Yeah.
It's inevitable.
Yeah.
I was like, hmm? But I would just like to give a quick shout out to Tom Hanks and the cast of Catch Me If You Can. It got me through. Every time I watch that film now, I get a bit emotional. I'm like, thank you, Tom. Thank you, Leo. Such a good film.
No, I don't know if I've seen it.
Watch it for me.
Yeah, I will.
So, yeah, I think it's interesting, the cycle. But
Yeah, it is. I didn't realise it was such a... that, you know, you could measure it in such a way. Mm. But I think what you do well generally when you're talking about these things and writing about them, of course, is to kind of make that parallel between mental and physical symptoms. As in, you know, when you say, if you had a broken leg, everybody would be sympathetic.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody, because it's so obvious, and it's, you know, nobody would question that person has a broken leg.
Yeah.
But you have a mental health condition, and... it's, you know, people don't treat it in the same way.
I think we're getting there bit by bit, but yeah, you're right. It's not the same when somebody's really annoying me and I'm like, it's, you know, I just don't understand it. You should be able to control it.
Yeah.
Like, I tell you what, how about I kick you in the balls? Balls is coming up a lot.
Yeah.
Sorry. I'll kick you in the balls and you tell me, like, I will say to you, you should be able to control that pain.
Mm.
Come on now.
Yeah.
Get a hold of yourself. I'll just kick you again. Let's try again.
Yeah, but I think stuff like this, like the diagram, the flow chart, whatever, it helps people kind of understand that it is it's a genuine thing. It's not something, you know, it's the same as a physical problem.
100%.
You know,
you can't measure it. If you've ever been in hospital, they will ask you to rate your pain from 1 to 10 because you can't measure it.
Yeah.
If you say you're in pain, the doctor can't say, oh my God, they are. You can't. So I'm like, it's the same thing. You're like, if you're in pain, you're in pain.
Yeah.
Just because you can't see it doesn't mean it's not real.
Yeah, exactly.
So I think that brings us nicely to my tip of the week, which is very simple. I think you should do a jingle for that too.
I was going to say, I think that was another bit. Tip of the week. Sponsored by Roseland Furniture. Or is it Rosewood? I always get mixed up.
I went there the other week, by the way.
Oh, did you?
Really expensive.
We're
a bit flush at the moment. If you go in there, I was like,
I don't know. I wouldn't say really expensive.
What we were looking at.
Yeah, I think it depends what you're looking for. There are things that are a reasonable price. Right. I'm not just saying that for getting sponsorship, by the way.
Oh God, but we are interested.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Always.
Yeah.
Because we made the mistake of going not bed shopping, sofa shopping for the house. You know, like adults. You're like, and as soon as you go in, because they're like sharks, and it's like, And when there's a bloke you don't know telling you, just lie on that couch like normal, or just relax, enjoy it. How does it feel? I'm like, weird, because I'm in a showroom, mate, and you're staring at me like bored.
Yeah, I can recommend somewhere that you don't go for that for your sofa, but I'll not do it on the podcast.
When we bought our bed, this salesman was really insulted that we didn't go for the one he recommended. Because I made my partner sleep on this every night. And I was like, this bed.
This exact
that's
one.
That's weird. And he was like, not getting the joke. I'm like, that, we sleep on that every night. I'm like, I know. That's why I'm not buying it. But anyway, tip of the week.
Tip of the week. Sponsored by Rosewood.
I would recommend that you, it's really simple this week, I'd recommend that you print off a simple panic attack cycle and pin it to your wall. If you want, you can use mine, just go back over and listen to what I've said, write it down, but pin it somewhere you can see it, because you will be able to use it as an anchor when you're going through an attack. You'll be like, this is a process like everything else. I'm not just flailing out of control like a kite. I'm very much attached to something. What's a kite analogy? The kite is attached to something.
Somebody's hand.
It's attached to a cycle. But yeah, that's my advice this week. Use it. It's like, knowledge is power. I know that sounds lame, but I really do believe that.
So. Yeah. And I think, I imagine it would get better with experience. You know, the more you sit down and think about it and write about what your experiences are, the more you'll get used to it.
Yeah. Thank you very much, as always, sir.
You're very welcome. See you next week.
You've been listening to Don't Panic Steve. Please subscribe. Please bribe.
What a peculiar place to have a party.